It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Scott Wapner with Jim Cramer at the New York Stock Exchange. Carl's on assignment. David has the morning off. Let's go right to the board and take a look at futures on this big day. We are in wait and see mode for the most part. S&P and Dow would open as modest losers today. NASDAQ positive. Our roadmap starts with Fed Day. It is the big day. The Fed takes center stage. We'll find out if Jay Powell is talking about, thinking about tapering. Plus, CNBC's Evolve Global Summit is getting underway. We'll hear from the head of the IMF and the CEO of Novartis. And breaking news out of GM announcing it's boosting its global spending on EVs by 30%, totaling $35 billion through 2025. CEO Mary Barra is going to join us exclusively in just a little bit. So excited about that interview coming up. But this is the day. This is right. The big day.
Look, I think that we are all conditioned at this point for parsing every single word of this gentleman, of Mr. Powell. And you know that there can be always one word that can trigger selling. We are in a seasonally weak moment for 22 years, actually, seasonally weak beginning Friday. So I am concerned that at one errant moment, Powell says something he shouldn't. Now, this is not, though, October 3rd of, 2018, when he blew up the market.
The taper tantrum?
Right. Well, that was like the destruction tantrum. That was not a tantrum. That was like a full-blown timeout. And what I think has to happen here is that we have to have calmer heads and just say, he said stay the course. We've seen a lot of peaking in a lot of different commodities. We have not seen a peaking in freight. And not a peaking in oil. And those are sticking points that can't necessarily. If he raises rates, it's not going to create more drivers. And it's not going to create more oil. So those who say that we should raise rates at all costs are not really understanding the nature of the U.S. economy.
Oil, 2.5-year high as we have this conversation. Copper and lumber, though, have rolled over.
Yeah. And
right? They've been coming down.
Right. Absolutely. And that matters. And aluminum's going to come down now that the Chinese have decided that it should be lower and they have a command economy so they can make it go lower. Oil is, again, you have a country where we're not drilling as much. Why would Shell be willing to sell, for $10
billion? $10
billion. The most fecund, I always wanted to use that word when it comes to oil, Permian Basin. It's because we are very unfavorable now to the oils. And President Biden was against drilling offshore. FERC's going to be very anti-pipeline. So we're very constrained in this country, which means we're not going to pump more. We need the Saudis. The Saudis are just waiting for a rig count to go up. Rig count's not going up, which is a very strange thing. The oil companies are exercising discipline, which is something that is very rare. And by the way, don't forget, when Engine One put three people on the board of Exxon, well, that was a clarion call that you have to stop drilling and figure out what you're doing. And that's where that industry is.
Exxon, by the way, is up 10% in June.
But it should be, because look about it. Their Exxon now is the Larry Fink is in charge of a lot of part of the market, BlackRock. And you have to start playing ball with BlackRock. Well, they run about $8 trillion.
World's biggest asset manager. Right.
And if they don't want you to destroy the earth, or if you want to put it the other way, to pollute a lot, then they have control. They're going to vote with the engine ones. I mean, if you and I decided we could be engine two and we go after, say, BP, you think BP is going to idly just say, you know what, we've been running our commercials and we're good.
Game changer, right?
BP's
it's a game changer. Let me ask you this. So the Fed has been, I think we can say, has been very capable over the years in its actions, but it's stumbled from time to time in its actual messaging.
Absolutely,
right? And that, you say, is the biggest risk that could come out of today.
Powell is throwing out the book. Powell has decided it is time to help labor. All right. Now, there are a lot of people who watch who, frankly, want the Fed to be on the side of capital. But I think that Jay Powell said over and over again, we have got to get minority employment back to where it was just a few years ago. It's double as bad, which is not good at all. He wants to put more people to work. I think he wants to wait. I think that what Powell's doing is saying, you know what, we don't have to act as rashly as we have had to as a Fed. And I just think that that's very, very smart. People want him to act rashly, and he's a prudent man.
Well, he's fixated on the employment problem. It's like, Mr. Chairman, what about all these calls, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, inflation's out of control, you guys don't know what you're doing? Yeah, but there's 8.5 million jobs that are still open, Steve Leisman. Well, yes, Mr. Chairman, but, there's a lot of people saying that you guys need a course correction because you guys are behind the boat with inflation. Yeah, but, I mean, this recovery's got a long way to go, such and such person from whatever news organization, right?
People in the 330
That's what
people in the country,
on.
330 million people in the country, he favors 329.5. I think that a lot of the richest people will come on, say that he can destroy us, the working person, if he keeps this up. And there's actually no evidence whatsoever that that's the case. And it kind of galls me at times that the billionaires are protecting the little guy and the CEOs. CEOs who make $200 million are not great protectors of the little guy.
The market, to this point, has sided with the Fed, given the Fed the benefit of the doubts. And the Fed knows what it's doing. Barclays had that note this morning that I know you and Andrew were talking about, that Carl had sent around, that the market is no longer pricing for out-of-control inflation. I mean, those are the facts, right?
Well,
by virtue of
look at the 10-year.
Look at the 10-year.
You know, when the 10-year's at 2, all these people tell us, okay, look what it's saying. But when it's at 1.5, other than Barclays, no one is saying anything. I mean, Barclays does that piece, and suddenly it is like, wow, stop trading. The 10-year, that's why the 10-year is going where it was. I don't want to bore people with this inside baseball, but Powell has said that inflation is going to run hot, but he wants to help unemployment. And to me, what he's saying is the working person needs help. Now, we do have this weird imbalance where there's a lot of jobs that are going begging. And then there's a lot of people who need a job. And that's an issue. I hope he addresses that, because that's very hard. I mean, truck drivers pay a good wage. OK, and we need many more truck drivers. But it's also a dangerous job and they work very hard. But if we had more truck drivers, inflation would come down rather dramatically.
He's also, the Fed are thinking a lot about, what's happening in the global economy. You know, we're having our Global Evolve Summit today. The IMF chief was speaking there just a short time ago. Here's what she said.
There is no separation in economic terms. We see global supply chains operating, and if anything, the pandemic just confirmed to us that we are interconnected and we are interdependent. It also sent a very important signal that we are dependent on Mother Nature. In other words, we are in a world in which there are global challenges we can only address together, and our economy is functioning in a very strongly interconnected manner.
Our Evolve Global Summit, by the way, continuing throughout the rest of the day today. What a stellar lineup. Look at that.
Look at those hitters.
CEO of Pfizer, McDonald's, Harley Davidson, Dick's, and more, and it's not too late to register.
Chris,
you can head
Kaminsky,
over.
That is someone.
We got a big lineup.
Interviews.
That's right.
That's right. Going to be good. McDonald's is at the forefront of whether there's inflation or not.
CNBC.com, CNBCEvents.com/evolve. So
you
want to head over there. All right, we got a lot more coming up. Up next, an exclusive with GM Chairman and CEO Mary Barra. Don't go anywhere. GM announcing just moments ago it's upping its EV investment by some $8 billion to $35 billion through 2025. Our Phil LeBeau joins us now with a very special guest. Phil?
Scott, thank you very much. Let's bring in Mary Barra, the chairman and CEO of General Motors, joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning. Mary, this is a huge commitment that General Motors is making. And I know you've got two pieces of news today. You've got the upgraded guidance for the first half, as well as your EV commitment. Let's start first off with the EV commitment. $8 billion, two additional battery plants in addition to the two you've already committed to. Give me a blueprint, if you could, as you look over the next couple of years.
Well, I think what we're seeing is with the strength of our Ultium platform and our commitment, unwavering commitment to moving to EVs as quickly as possible, we continue to make advancements. You know, if you go back before the pandemic, we were at $20 billion as we worked through and said we were going to accelerate our move to EVs. We went to $27 billion. And then because of the strength of the Hummer truck, the Hummer EV, the Cadillac Lyriq, and BrightDrop, and other commercial vehicle opportunities we have, in addition to the Chevrolet Silverado, we recognized that we needed additional battery cell capacity. So we're very happy to be announcing today that we'll be adding two more additional battery cell manufacturing plants in the U.S. By the end of 2025.
You say the strength of whether it's the Hummer, whether it's the Lyriq, the BrightDrop offerings. Are you hearing back from, A, your dealers or customers, whether it's on the fleet side or elsewhere, who are saying, yeah, bring it. We want more than what you initially thought?
Actually, Phil, that is exactly it. Across whether it's BrightDrop, whether it's some of the commercial vehicle offerings that we're going to have, whether it's the Hummer truck and SUV, the Cadillac Lyriq, customers are, we're getting great customer feedback. And as you know, many of these vehicles, if they have been put on sale, they're already sold out. Or when we talk to our fleet customers, very, very strong demand. And then we can't wait to start taking orders for the Cadillac Lyriq. So across the board, we are seeing exceptionally strong reactions and positive response to all of our electric vehicles.
Mary, what's funding this is the fact that you're having a heck of a year in terms of profits. This morning, you raised your guidance for the first half. You now plan to make between $8.5 and $9.5 billion. I know you already said you expected to do better than expected for the second quarter and for the first half. What are you seeing in terms of the ability to manage the chip shortage? Because I think a lot of people are going to be surprised when they see how well you're doing in the second quarter.
Well, I have to credit our team. We have a cross-functional team that is really seizing every opportunity to identify chips and make substitutions to enable us to continue to build our vehicles that are incredibly strong demand. And so with that work, with the strong performance of General Motors Financial, and the fact that because of the work by the team, there were some chips that we were able to make available that allowed us to pull production from third quarter into second quarter, all of that is contributing to the strong results that we believe we're going to deliver in this first half. The chip situation continues to be very complex and very volatile, but I'm confident our team is going to enable every single vehicle possible to be built.
Mary, it's Jim Cramer, and it is so great to see you. Congratulations on everything you're doing, and particularly what you're doing for the environment. So great to see you. How are things going when it comes to what you're going to do with batteries?
Well, Jim, it's great to see you as well. And, you know, I think the work that we're doing, not only do we have one of the largest battery labs in North America, I think the largest battery lab in North America, our team working in partnership with startup companies as well as LG, and then the work we're doing our own gives us confidence that we're going to be in a leadership position in battery cost. As we introduce the Ultium platform, the cost will go down 40% from what they are today with the Chevrolet Bolt EV. And then by mid-decade, we expect that'll be a 60% reduction. And that's not the end. We have a technological roadmap to take even further cost out of the battery cells while improving energy density.
Well, Mary, I know you as a competitive person, but also just someone who cares passionately about the environment. But I want to know, I mean, Elon Musk is someone who really basically tells us he's got a monopoly on everything. Particularly monopoly on the environment, monopoly on batteries. When I listen to you, I question whether Elon Musk doesn't, it may have some competition down the road that he may not be expecting.
Well, I feel very confident with the EV product lineup that we have coming out and the fact that we have exceptionally strong brands, huge customer loyalty, and a lot of customers are going to look to that trusted vehicle and the trusted dealer to say, that's where I want to buy my electric vehicle from. So then when you look at the safety and the reliability that is in General Motors products, I feel that we are in an extremely strong position to lead in electric vehicles, and we'll stop at nothing short of in North America and then in other markets, leading with electric vehicles. Because also, we have the opportunity to provide a full range of vehicles, different brands, different price points, to really capture the emotional connection that people have to their vehicle.
Hey, Mary, it's Scott Wapner. It's good to see you this morning. Just following on what Jim asked you, I just saw today Ford's Lincoln brand now expects half of its sales to be all electric models by 2026. Volkswagen's doing its thing. Jim obviously referenced Tesla and Elon Musk. Who is your biggest competitor in your mind? Is it Ford? Is it Volkswagen? Is it Musk?
Well, I've always taken every one of our competitors very seriously, but I also, you know, we are the number one vehicle producer in the United States, number two in China. So we're going to keep doing what it takes to satisfy the customer better than anyone else, not only with beautifully designed vehicles with the right range, but also with the right quality, durability, reliability, and battery technology that, you know, we really have significant, I think, a leadership position. We've been working on battery electric vehicles for two decades. And so we're going to take all of that experience, the great learning that we've had with the Chevrolet Bolt EV and now the Bolt EUV, and put all that energy into our brands across the board to win customers. So I take everyone very seriously, but I think we're exceptionally well positioned.
Yep. Speaking of Musk, he said recently that Tesla would consider accepting Bitcoin again if it became more environmentally friendly. You said at the end of March, when asked on a call about whether General Motors would accept Bitcoin, you said if there's strong consumer demand for it, there's nothing that precludes us from doing that. Have you thought more about it? Will General Motors accept Bitcoin?
Our position remains the same. There's nothing that precludes us from doing that. We'll be driven by our customers. Certainly, we want to make the whole buying and ownership experience as easy as possible. So we'll follow their lead.
Mary, you're in Washington today, and I know you're going to be meeting with members of Congress, perhaps with some of the people in the Biden administration, about extending or expanding EV incentive, particularly when it comes to the federal tax credit, the $7,500 tax credit, which people who are buying EVs from you are not eligible for now because you've already passed the threshold for sales. How optimistic are you that you can get that reinstated so that when people are going in to buy the Hummer, that they will be able to say, OK, yeah, I get the $7,500 federal tax credit?
Well, I think with the way the current bill or the legislation is being written, some vehicles will qualify, some at the top end of the market will not. But we really think being a first mover shouldn't be something that's penalized as we look at EV adoption. We're going forward with a full portfolio, but we think to level the playing field, having everybody have that same opportunity is going to be important. So we continue to have those discussions. I am optimistic that there's going to be a legislative solution here, and we're going to continue to support those changes.
And how do you feel about charging infrastructure in this country? I know you've been a big proponent of it. You guys are putting your own money behind working with some of the charging companies on developing that. Do you expect more of a commitment from the Biden administration?
Well, clearly, it's part of the infrastructure discussion. I think the president has talked about 500,000 charging stations. And when we look at it, and we've done a lot of customer research on charging, people like to charge at home if they have the opportunity to do that in their garage. Work is another opportunity to charge. We're installing chargers in our work sites, and we'll continue to look for opportunities to encourage others to do that. But then we do need to make sure that there's charging available for people who maybe don't have designated parking at home. That's why we're working with so many startups and making it easy for consumers that when they leverage our app, for instance, on the Chevrolet Bolt, leverage their Chevrolet app, they're able to easily know if they're going from point A to point B where they need to charge and that there'll be a charger there that's available and working for them. We're going to continue that work, and I think there's more to come from General Motors on what we'll be doing from an infrastructure perspective.
All right, so Mary, we know that you have a lineup that's unbelievable, including the Hummer, which you know how hard it is to get, but personally you and I have talked about that. We know that you have one of the greatest battery infrastructure plans out there. How do we deal with the fact that all the analysts have to raise numbers after this broadcast that Phil has kindly brought to us? How do you deal with the fact that your battery business alone might be worth the whole company?
Well, I think there's tremendous opportunity for value creation for General Motors with all of the different growth initiatives that we have. The Ultium platform, and just yesterday we announced a memorandum of understanding with Webtech to supply Ultium and Hydrotech fuel cells into the locomotive business. So I think when you look at the strength of the Ultium platform, huge growth opportunity. I think when you look at what we're doing with BrightDrop, we aren't really in that market right now, and I think that represents a tremendous business opportunity. And those initial vehicles will be going this year to FedEx Express. So there's tremendous growth opportunity in the services part of our business, the software, because our vehicle is really a platform with our vehicle intelligence platform, which is the electrical architecture, and the services we put on that, OnStar is just the beginning, as well as OnStar Insurance. So I think there are several growth engines in General Motors, and we're going to just keep pushing ahead and accelerating them like we're doing today of announcing, you know, a faster pivot to EVs. So I really see long-term value creation for General Motors and for our shareholders.
But Mary, if you're already selling some of your batteries, why would we not be able to get a stake in this battery company that, again, I say would be worth more than the $88 billion market cap of your company?
Well, I think, though, if you look at, you know, for an electric vehicle, it's all about the battery. And so owning that technology and the ability that we have right now to sell it, you know, within industry with our partnership with Honda in other opportunities, whether it's large trucks or locomotives, stationary power, et cetera, I think keeping that technology close and leveraging the deep battery expertise we have at General Motors is the way that we're going to accelerate that value creation.
Mary, it's Phil. One last question. As you guys are planning to roll out two additional battery plants, in addition to the two you've already started work on, there are more than a few skeptics out there, not just for General Motors, but for the EV conversion across the country, who are saying we are not going to have enough of the raw materials needed to make as many vehicles as the automakers are committing to through 2025, let alone 2030. What do you say to the skeptics out there who really do not believe that this ramp up will be able to take place on the timeline that you guys are throwing out?
Well, I think one of the things you have to focus on is because of the battery expertise that we have in company, we've done a lot to minimize precious metals and the different elements that are possibly going to be in short supply, continue to need less of them while improving the energy density. In addition, we have, I think, the best purchasing team in industry, if not in across industry, and the work they're doing to make sure that we have secure and ethically procured all of the materials that we need from a battery perspective. That work's going on right now. So I can't speak for the whole industry. I can just tell you the work that's going on at General Motors. I have confidence that with these four battery plants that we'll have by the end of 2025, we will have the capability to make sure we're able to deliver on those EVs. And our goal and our commitment to continue to work to be number one in EVs in the United States and then in other markets around the world.
Mary, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A big day ahead of you, I know for sure, in Washington, D.C. Also a big day, Jim, for us to keep an eye on shares of General Motors. You heard what Mary had to say, or Scott, about what they're doing, their commitment. Look at what shares of General Motors are doing right now, up more than 2.5%. And this seems to happen every time they make this commitment to EVs. The stock moves higher. Scott, back to you.
You are so right, yeah. Phil. This is just really big news, and obviously the stock's way too low. Thank you for that amazing interview.
Yep, Phil, thank you. Barry, thank you as well. And what you just tweeted, GM is worth far more than it is selling. Yep. You're speaking about the stock.
You bet.
Yep. All right, up next is Cramer's Mad Dash as we count down to the opening bell here at Post 9. We'll be right back. All right, it's time for Cramer's Mad Dash as we count down to the opening bell. You want to talk about a dud this morning.
We're going to expose a false narrative. Their Oracle's trading down. Everyone thinks, well, you know, the guidance was that bad. Safra Katz is very, very conservative. She did call it a fantastic quarter. There was absolutely nothing that indicated to me that that momentum won't continue. And not just because Larry Ellison would come here and beat that my head in two by fours are too expensive, except for Ellison. But listen,
he'll run you over with one of his yachts.
Yeah, Jeffrey's rate. Jeffrey says raises price target. JP Morgan raises price target. BMO raises price target. Barclays says it's range bound. Stiefel raises price target. Citi raises price target. Piper. In other words, it's not going down. Buy the stock, for heaven's sake.
Well, we just ignore the guide was lower than expectations.
Oh, Safra always does that. Do people ever not listen to Safra Catz? I've been listening to Safra Catz since Safra Catz was, I don't know, when she was just appointed. She does not ever, ever raise numbers.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that, along with everything else. The opening bells, they're ringing, as you can hear at the big board. Convey Health Solutions celebrating its IPO, and up at the NASDAQ also celebrating its IPO, is WalkMe, a digital adoption platform.
All right, so we have GM, because it was such a huge interview.
Yeah, you again, not we glossed over it because we had to go to break, but you said the stock is trading lower than it should be, even after it's had a great run.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, this and Ford are such inexpensive stocks. If they could get the chips, I mean, Ford is sold out for everything that I know I want. GM will be sold out. Try to get a Hummer. Try to get one. You can't. I mean, when in your life have you ever seen it that the two major auto companies don't have enough inventory, and their used cars are worth so much? So if you lease a GM, and after 3 years you give it back to them, they can sell it for more than you paid for it. People don't understand the dynamics of this industry.
How would you have answered the question I asked Mary about their biggest competitor? Who is it? I mean, I know you love Farley and Ford. VW? Right. I mean, should we even take Musk seriously
in
the context of the conversation?
Well, okay, there's two.
Obviously take him seriously, but you know what
Musk has to be taken seriously because he's been so successful.
But versus GM?
Well, the only issue with GM and why Volkswagen is, I think, the biggest competitor is that Volkswagen over in Germany, they've basically decided, listen, we are European. And the Europeans have spoken. They do not want internal combustible engines. So that's what Volkswagen is playing for. Volkswagen makes 10 million cars. I happen to be at their Puebla plant. You know, the Puebla plant's the largest in the world. I mean, 55,000 people work there. I mean, that's all the ones that made in this country. And they're the most committed I know.
You get everywhere. You've been there?
Yes, I've been there many times. Right. And they are so committed, VW, because of where they are. I mean, don't forget, Europe is different from here. I mean, I got a ticket for recycling, but putting a green bottle in a brown thing, I thought all glass is sorted. It was a citizen's arrest, basically. They take this stuff very seriously. We are not there yet. Even though I have Lionel Basel tonight, and they are trying very hard to get it so that people in America separate.
So
we're not separators.
I'm looking at the way we have opened here, and obviously we're in wait-and-see mode for later this afternoon, but the banks, for example, are placing their bets on what's going to happen today, and that's nothing. That J-PAL's not going to announce anything really substantive about tapering, but all the banks are down off the open. They've been down this week. They've been down this month.
All right, here's what. Remember Treasury Secretary Rubin? So I interviewed him when I was at Street.com, trying to make news, okay? He starts the interview by saying, I want to tell you right now, nothing I say is making news. On air, on record, nothing. So if you even say for a moment that there's new news here, I'm going to dispute that. So I want to repeat again. There is nothing in this interview that really matters. It's not going to change anything. And if you say that I've changed my mind, I will discredit you.
But you're saying that even if he comes out today, Jay Powell, and says we acknowledge that we're talking about tapering, that's not new news, that they put it on the table. Yes, we are talking about it. But we still have a long way to go before we actually get to that point.
Are they supposed to just sit there and talk about the Nets?
I mean KD's performance last night was epic. You think he didn't watch that?
He talks about KD. I too think that there is an issue here, which is that to admit that you're talking about it, the only way to combat that is to say this is not news. I admit we're talking about it. This is not news. We've thought about it. Because you see, when the hecklers, also known as the reporters, go after him, of which I've already said, just cut it to four or five people, Jay. Enough. I mean, not everyone. You know, draw straight.
Leisman,
have a little lottery.
Leisman, 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 and Leisman.
Well, whatever. But it just pick five names out of a hat, okay? And those are the only five. Because, I mean, really, Jay, don't you have better things to do than sit there and take the same question over? I feel bad for Jay. He's kind of locked in. But he ought to say at the beginning, I'd like to just say, as Jim Cramer told me to say, that would be That would make my head so big I couldn't get through the door, but I would like
imagine?
That.
We'd have to take down the plexiglass around this
thing. Absolutely. As Jim Cramer told me to say, nothing I say is news. So if you say it's news, no, I'm not kidding. Yes, he said it. He can leave my name out of it. I'm happy to give it to Jay because I like him so much.
Okay, so what's the post-Fed playbook based on what you just said, that really nothing's going to happen?
Well, then I think that there'll be people who say, I've got to go buy the industrials, and he's giving you green light to buy the free ports of the world. Chinese trying to fight you on that.
Chemicals?
Oh, my, chemicals, yes. I have Lyondell on tonight. One of the reasons I want them on is because that's the quintessential stock to buy if you believe that he says, look, nothing I say, Steve, is deviant from what I've said before.
Really? Because Paul Tudor Jones said it's the NASDAQ you want to look at, right? That can go up 20% if they do
said,
nothing.
Commodities. Lyondell's like the great
Well, he said commodities, too, but he said the NASDAQ could go up 20% if they do nothing.
But, you know, we didn't even talk about the 20-year-old, I'm sorry, the 32-year-old who's now in charge of the FTC.
Lina Khan?
Yeah, Lina Khan, who, by the way, just for the record, spell check always makes it come out Line Khan.
I know you're making jokes here, but
How
much of an issue is her appointment to big tech?
Okay, here's why no. Because if you break up Amazon, say, there's some notes today about how everyone loves Amazon, it would be worth a lot more in pieces because the prime's worth $1,000. If you break up Facebook, then you get both Facebook and you get Instagram. If you break up Alphabet, holy cow, bring it on, we'll sell Waymo, right? I mean, that would be the greatest thing in the world. Apple's now a health company. Give it a PE of 32 like the health companies. That leaves Netflix, which we saw this morning in a note that was just, I think, sage-like. There it is, right here. J.P. Morgan's incrementally positive. They like the slate. So obviously, J.P. Morgan's looked at the new movies and new series and likes them. I have not. We do have some people here who watch what the series are. I mean, obviously, Netflix, now no longer bound by COVID, can start doing some of the things it used to do.
So Amazon.
And Lupin, by the way, started.
Amazon, popular show, favored by a lot of people. Amazon, which is, I mean, it feels kind of late that Jefferies is adding it to its top pick.
It's never
they're,
late,
taking
it's
off,
fang.
They're taking off Alphabet.
Yeah, that was needless and gratuitous.
Amazon's your favorite.
Oh, my, yes. To the moon, as those guys used to say who were one time involved with that thing, Reddit thing.
The Journal, though, this morning has an interesting read on how Apple's sort of move to become this health company perfect as everybody is making it out
too
to
big.
Be.
He came on Mad Money and said, listen, his legacy is going to be a healthcare company. Not mentioned, of course, in that article.
Right, but it doesn't happen overnight, Jim, right? I mean,
it's happening. The watch. The watch is going to be how you regulate your life. I mean, when the auto, my wife had the auto light go on her car, which is years old and has like 160 miles.
Like the engine light?
Yeah, the engine light.
Right?
Now, we spent more time with the engine light than we have on our health all our lives. Like the engine light. I mean, but when this watch says you've got the engine light of your body, that's going to be Tim Cook's legacy. The engine light. This is going to be your engine light. I got a picture of my wife there with me. It's really great. I wish we could do a close-up. But it is, that's his legacy. And it's going to be the watch, and it's going to be tied into blood pressure. We're going to know whether you're about to have a heart attack. 600,000 people die of heart attacks needlessly. That is Tim Cook's legacy.
Okay, so that's big picture legacy. What gets
the small picture?
No, but I want to know what gets the stock out of the 120s. It's been sitting there for a while.
You sound like someone calls in on the show and says, you know what, I own Amazon, and it was up 200 points last week. It's not been up today.
But Apple's like, oh, I don't know.
Apple's up big last year.
It sits at 125
Nvidia,
forever, right? Now
Nvidia
it's at 129.
Was at 725, now 712. What is that Jensen Huang doing out there? No, I mean, come on, Apple was up huge last year. It's consolidating.
Okay, well, when does it finish consolidating? Because Amazon was consolidating, too. That's starting to move. When's Apple going to really start to move again?
You cut me to the quick. I don't know. I think it has to report a couple of really great quarters where we see the ancillary products. I was at the Apple store yesterday just to be able to say.
Of course you were.
If you asked me about that, it was packed. We had to wear masks. But if the accessories and the service revenue stream go up and we begin to value Apple by long-term value of customers, as we got a note today for Amazon saying they're worth $1,000, then we're all going to raise estimates of what this company's worth. And that's what's going to happen. That's how Apple's going to go higher. And Apple Plus, all the different ancillaries, Apple Pay. When people start valuing these for what they're worth, then the stock is going to go much, much higher.
All right. We said we're open, but we're kind of in wait-and-see mode. We've got a Dow that's
Roblox.
Barely... Oh, Roblox.
There's a big roadblock on Roblox.
Let me see Roblox.
No,
Roblox is getting hammered, right? I got to look at it.
Don't look at it. Don't burn your eyes.
That's ugly. It's down almost 11%.
Well, they had some pretty bad numbers. I was going to try to hedge that and say they had some suboptimal numbers, but sometimes things breach suboptimal and go right down to the bad level. It did there.
Suboptimal. Did you look at DraftKings, by the way, since we talked about it yesterday?
Yeah, well,
right?
I mean,
we had the Hindenburg report, and then we had another report that Kathy Wood
bought 900,000 shares.
$42 million worth.
How many divisions
does
Hindenburg
have? Not insignificant.
You know, with Hindenburg, this is, I think, may not look again. I work for DraftKings. I think Jason Robinson runs an outfit where he literally could take this one division and just sell it to somebody for a dollar, and then Hindenburg, this ST division, and then Hindenburg would have to say, you know what? No harm, no foul. Stock goes higher. All Jason has to do is get rid of that one division, which he could. He doesn't need it. It's 8% of the revenue.
But let's just take the move that Kathy Wood made. Take the story itself out of the picture in terms of what drove DraftKings down. Let's just say a number of those ARK stocks go down. Did Kathy Wood, is that the right playbook? If these any
well, she's been
a number of these
the stuff
she buys all the way down.
She's been that, averaging down.
That's
which
why
we know
I ask you, is that the right play for the average Joe who is in Kathy Wood stocks? You get hit, you buy.
That historically has not been a good way to run a fund. Now, remember, she doesn't run a fund. She's always anxious to tell you that the inflows don't matter in ways to the which I don't really fathom because it's true that they do matter, even if it's an ETF. But I would say going over Hindenburg stuff, and I know Hindenburg, totally backed him on Nikola, totally. Totally backed him on Lordstown. Backed him on Clover. Did not back him on Grow Generation. Because the fundamentals were too good for the pot industry. Notice I don't call it cannabis. Cannabis is how they try to get it. They try to upscale it. I think that what matters with DraftKings is gambling. Whether more people will gamble. And whether they have a low cost of acquisition. That's what matters. Not this division that they can get rid of tomorrow. So Kathy Wood, I think, ultimately is going to be right. If you have an NFL season where more people want to gamble, do you think we're going to remember this little division that's 8% of their business? No. No. Legal gambling is one of the most important trends in the country.
I know.
Every state is bankrupt.
It's not like they're the only players, though. I mean, you know, Penn National's pretty good, right? That stock's been good.
There's room for Penn Nat.
Right.
And they got that Barstool. That's very good. Hey, listen, there's even room for FanDuel for when it comes to that. I mean, but I think when you look at DraftKings' site and you look at the money they pour into it, they want to be first mover advantage and they want to dominate. And only Penn Nat can stand in their way, I think.
Another winner I wanted to highlight this morning with you, Jim, SoFi is up better than 2%. Got an initiation call today at Rosenblatt.
That was
$30 sick. The price target. That's, you know, substantial from here because it's at $21.
Look, I Anthony Noto is very good. SoFi is an enemy of the J.P. Morgans of the world. SoFi, PayPal. It's like kind of now it is a trinity, right? It's Square,
PayPal
and
SoFi.
I mean, Noto's injected himself into the debate.
It's the trifecta of kind of pain for Jamie Dimon yesterday, well, right? Just sort of
the envy
we,
that
didn't,
Jamie
we
Dimon
didn't get
has.
It. We could have gotten it. We didn't get it.
He has tremendous envy for the companies that don't have to play ball with the regulators. Don't have to worry about deposits and what the Fed says. You know, look, Jamie is basically saying we got to play with one hand tied behind our back. These guys can do whatever they want. I think he's right that it's not fair. But you know what? Life's unfair. Deserves has got nothing to do with it. Classic line.
Right, but fair doesn't have anything to do with missing the boat. They missed the boat.
He missed the boat.
Said so.
Yeah.
He said so. We didn't say so. He said so.
No, you said it.
Bob Pisani. Today's the big day, and then the real work begins, right?
That's right. We've got the second half of the year to go through. Flattish open as we wait for the Fed. But this inflation trade, it's looking very, very toppy. I want to show you some stocks here. But look at the sectors today, as we always do. Tech's leading early on. Healthcare, there's your growth sectors right there. Banks, materials, you see down again today. That's what I'm talking about. That's a proxy for the inflation trade. Take a look at these global copper producers. There's not a lot of them. Antofagasta over in London, trades in London, down again 2%. Freeport's down 2%. Southern Copper's the other big one. That's down almost 2%. This has been happening for several weeks now. Take a look at where they are from their 52-week highs. All of these stocks topped out in May. Why am I bringing it up? Well, these are proxies for the inflation trade. May was when they looked 20%, 27% for Antofagasta. Southern Copper down 25% from their 52-week high. And it was only 5 or 6 weeks ago. So there's a proxy on the inflation trade. We'll see if that continues. Where are we right now? Let's just call it the summer trading days. That's what's going on. Do you know the last time we had a 1% move in the S&P? It was May 20th. It was 17 days ago. That's a little strange, folks. Last time we had a 5% pullback, it was October. Those of you who don't follow these kinds of internal machinations, it's very typical for the S&P 500 to have a 10% correction from its recent high to its recent low at least once a year. We haven't had a 5% correction since October. That's why a lot of people are sort of walking around saying, gee, where's the trend? Well, the Fed's going to come and we are going to have a second half of the year. I'll tell you what the big themes are right now. And one really big theme that everybody's trying to figure out. Obviously, taper talk and inflation are going to sort of be the main issues here. But we've got some tax uncertainty, a little less than it was a couple months ago. There's some concerns about profit margin erosions. Maybe we'll be squeezed by input costs that are not going to be offset by price increases. Maybe. But the big thing I see is confusion on the economic side. Where are we? This is a variant on the peak everything theme. Are we at a peak of everything or are we not? Well, the variant is what's going on with the economic cycle. So there's different ways to look at this because you own different stocks. So, for example, in the early stage of an economic cycle, you have an economic expansion. You would traditionally buy cyclical stocks, industrial stocks, material stocks. Are we there or are we past that? What happens to the other stage, about the middle stage? That's when the growth and earnings will start. Still strong, but they're decelerating. Interest rates are still low. Here you kind of buy technology. A lot of people that say that's where we are right now. But there are other people don't agree. They think we're slowly moving into a later stage where we're going to get higher rates and inflation. We're going to have high P.E. ratios. And you're going to have to go out and buy defensive stocks. Put up that next full screen. You're going to see here that later stage. So what happens now? After that, where are we right now? Why can't we figure out what stage of the economic cycle we're in? Well, because we've had this distortive effects of fiscal monetary policy, which were necessary, of course, to deal with what's going on. We have this depressionary bust in March of last year. We went to a boom in a few months. We've never seen that before. If that doesn't create confusion, I don't know what will. So what's coming next? Are we going to have a boom era? Some people think we are. And I know people who think we're going to have, Scott, rampant inflation going back to the 1970s. This is not, let's have GDP at 2 or 2.5%. These are miles apart in their opinions, and it's because we can't quite figure out where we are. Maybe the Fed can help us a little bit today. Scott, back to you.
We will see. We are counting down to that, Bob. Thank you very much. And as we head to break, take a look at how treasuries are faring this morning. Yeah, wait and see mode there as well. We were talking about the 10-year note yield this morning. It's sitting at 148. I think that's the lows of the morning, too. 30-year is at 217. Lower across the board as we await the Fed's policy statement. That's due out at 2 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be right back.
I still would say it is remarkable that 18 months from when this virus first emerged, we have billions of vaccine doses produced, multiple therapeutics, and Novartis is playing its part also producing for some of our partners. We should have over 10 billion doses, we hope, by the end of this year produced around the world.
All right, the CEO of Novartis at CNBC Evolve Global Summit discussing healthcare in a post-pandemic world. It's just more good news. There's the Regeneron news today.
The story, I wish we could hold up the cover, the front page of the New York Times. It basically just, California and New York are now open for business.
Yeah, they are.
And there were fireworks on last night. So I said, what? I went on to my wife. I said, what are the fireworks for? She goes, we hit 70%. I mean, this is a country that where there are parts of the country where things wouldn't know what 70% is. And then there are other parts of the country means we're at herd immunity. We can go anywhere we want and do anything we want. And we can go around the world. We can go to Italy, go to Europe. He's right.
Well,
Barrasim is right.
On that note, speaking of being able to go to Europe, the EU has added the U.S. to its safe travel list. So that's a big
it's
step.
It's incredibly important because if you're an airline, if you're Delta, raise numbers Delta. I'm not kidding. If we had Phil, raise numbers Delta. Raise numbers United. Right now.
Well, there are
raise
people,
numbers.
There are people who are raising numbers on things like the cruise lines, right? The big three got an upgrade.
That's why not?
Carnival, NCL, and RCL upgraded at Wolf today.
Right. Yeah, well, it's because the people want to cruise very badly.
Yeah, I know, but we had someone on yesterday in the 10 o'clock hour who suggested all of that good news is already in the stocks. So it's not like, you know, there's a one-sided view here. Well, this is positive. I mean, the other one yesterday was, lot of this move is here already.
That has not been the case in this market. This is a market that uniquely does not know how to do the old days of discounting. Every time someone comes out and says something new, like Amazon, do we know that Amazon Prime isn't worth more? Of course we know. But then they come out and say it. I mean, everything moves. GM moves. SoFi moves.
What's the best?
Things move.
Best cruise stock right now is what?
Still Norwegian because they got the best balance sheet.
Best hotel stock right now is what?
I still have to go with Airbnb.
Oh, okay. Best airline stock right now.
Oh, that's, you know, geez, it's always going to be Southwest. I have no compunctions.
All right. I like the rapid fire. We got to take a break, though. CNBC's Evolve Global Summit continuing throughout the rest of the day today. We do have a stellar lineup. The CEOs of Pfizer, McDonald's, Harley-Davidson, Dix, and many more. And it's not too late to register either. Head over to CNBCEvents.com/Evolve to attend. We'll be right back on Squawk on the Street. Time now for stock trading.
Sometimes calls are, you were talking earlier about what people know and what is how many times you can get discount information. Well, here's new information. This morning, Boston Beer City is cutting their price target. Slowdown in companies Nielsen, she calls disconcerting. I've got to tell you, Sam's too high if that's the case, Boston Beer. I'm disconcerted if she's disconcerted. Oh, the stock's up now? Are you kidding me? All right, go. Right in my face. Let's be the memesters.
They say the trends look really bad.
Wait, well, don't you think that's negative?
That sounds negative to me.
Well, I wouldn't be a buyer of the stock into that moment. Remember, Sam has been one of the hottest stocks in the world, and a lot of that is truly because of...
Truly. Well, right in the pandemic? What do you mean, like drinking during the pandemic? Now we're coming out of the pandemic?
You go into refrigerator these days with anyone who's under 30, and all it's do is fill with this White Claw and Truly really tastes terrible. And watch out, Corona's got one coming. Everyone's got one coming. I'm the only one doesn't have one coming.
One, which one? High Noon, I think it's called.
High Noon. Well, that's really perfect. Good. I like High West, but that's a whole different drink.
All right.
Hey, listen, tonight I've got Albertsons, and we're going to talk about inflation. I've got Lyondell, and we'll talk about inflation. And I have Centene, and we'll probably talk about...
The Fed?
Inflation. Because the Fed is, you know, look, today is a day where we know if Powell doesn't do what I say, which is that I'm not making any news today.
Right.
I'm sticking with my thesis. Then he's going to have to be hectored by every single reporter. And it'll be a nightmare because one of those reporters is going to get under his skin and he's going to say, enough already.
I hope he mentions your name, as we said at the top, because if he does, I can't wait to see him
do it.
If you can make it in the set.
I mean, you know, I do. I mean, I actually like the guy.
Right, we got to go.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.